So Julie, again, not a rare situation. What would you be thinking about?
Well, first of all, this brings up an issue of doing scans in asymptomatic patients, and we would never even do any of those scans until the patient has symptoms. So that's sort of for another day, another discussion.
Well, and we can get into that too, because we are going to talk about that. But again, the patient shows up at your door for a second opinion.
Mm-hmm. So in an asymptomatic patient, I probably would do nothing. I would say watch and wait at this point, because we have, you know, so many new opportunities coming forward in the future, and why do everything today when we might have more opportunities in the future? But that's a long discussion with the patient, and you know, there's lots of other issues to discuss as far as treatment as well.
So the other point to bring up, so she did have probably some minimal symptoms where she was feeling fatigue and discomfort, which may not have been directly related to her lymphoma, but difficult to tell. And she was anxious to initiate on therapy and was going to initiate therapy regardless of what anybody.
How big was the disease?
You said she had several lymph nodes. So she did meet GELF criteria by having more than three lymph nodes that were bigger than 3 centimeters and had several lymph nodes that are in the 3 to 4 centimeter range now at this point.
That's a long discussion, a long appointment about really aggressive therapy versus less aggressive therapy at that point. And so if somebody of that age, you know, potentially would still want to consider transplantation as an option. So that would be on the more aggressive side of what I would discuss with her. On the less aggressive side, you know, some of the other treatment options for her as far as bendamustine, rituximab is an option. Many different agents would be an option at that point. At this juncture, you have to really discuss very aggressive nature versus not aggressive nature with the patient, I think.
What about that idea, Chris, of aggressive treatment for her?
Yeah, I think it was appropriate to consider, and we discussed that as well, the role of autologous stem cell transplant and potentially the long-term role of allogeneic stem cell transplant. She was still very active working. She was a healthcare professional and was very busy and didn't want to spend time away from work, and particularly the time that it was going to take to go through an autologous transplant.
John?
I would have strongly recommended an autologous approach 1 year after R-CHOP. You know, the median progression-free survival after R-CHOP chemotherapy is in the 4 to 5 year range. And she had evidence of disease progression within a year of obtaining a documented complete remission. And I would have predicted the biology of her disease to be poor. And I can say in 2006, and if I saw a similar situation today in my clinic, at that point, I would have said this is the type of case that I would have recommended for an autologous transplant approach. I find it fascinating that she's been able to remain under control for 7 years with single-agent rituximab after such a rapid progression after R-CHOP. I don't think that's necessarily the common scenario. But at her age, still, given at least demonstration of relative refractoriness to standard doses of chemotherapy, my vote would be more toward an aggressive approach like Julie was suggesting.
Mike?
Well, so she's relatively young. I agree with the comments about, a little surprising, she did as well as she did with rituximab. So she responded to second-line rituximab, did well with maintenance, and has been off it now for 3 years?
She's been off, correct.
And so she wants to do something, but she doesn't want to do a big thing. So the question is, what might you do to bridge her over to such time as I think she may well need a transplant or something more aggressive? So, you know, given that rituximab response and the time off therapy, I mean, I would have the long discussion about the options, but I would consider just treating her with rituximab again and putting her back on maintenance again, given she had a good response, she's had a good time off therapy, she may well respond again. So that might be a start, and at least you give her a chance to show you whether she's going to be able to get a good response to probably the simplest and safest therapy she could get right now and probably avoid a cytotoxic. If she doesn't respond well to that, then I think she's kind of declared that she's going to have to do something more. And I think rather than just add any subsequent therapy I give, if it's going to be bendamustine or whatever, would be, I would be thinking we're moving toward a transplant with her, that we're going to induce her and get her off to that kind of hopefully more durable remittive therapy.
Andy?
Yeah, I probably would go somewhere in between. I think this would be one where, I mean, obviously there's a few decision points. I mean, one, does she need treatment? Sounds like she does. Might be, could possibly follow, but she likely will progress just on observation. So then the second decision point, what to treat with or what to get back into remission with. And the third decision point is, do you consolidate with a transplant? And obviously, the patient's wishes and desires go into that third decision point. I probably would give a cytotoxic, something like bendamustine rituximab. She is young. Yes, it's a little more toxic, but you would like to achieve a durable remission. And I would almost use that as a harbinger of how is she going to do thereafter.